Do I need all these specialized resources now if I can just throw generative AI at this problem? And yeah, it might be expensive, but like, am I saving costs because it's so much easier to use? And that's kind of where you kind of have to get into these nuanced trade-off discussions and really drill deep into the use cases.
Today on the Daily Scoop podcast from the Scoop News Group, generative AI is not a panacea, and federal agencies deliver on 180-day requirements under the AI executive order. It's Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. Welcome to the Daily Scoop podcast, where you'll hear the latest news and trends facing government leaders. I'm the host of the Daily Scoop podcast, Billy Mitchell. Here are today's top headlines. It's been 6 months since President Biden signed his historic executive order on artificial intelligence. And with that, federal agencies have hit some key milestones set out as requirements by the EO. The Office of Personnel Management in particular had some major tasks to hit within 180 days of the executive order signing. OPM told FedScoop that it is issuing guidance on use of generative AI tools for the federal workforce, a competency model and skills-based hiring guidance for AI positions to help agencies find people with the skills needed for those roles, and an AI competency model specifically for civil engineering. The agency also established an interagency working group for AI as required by the order. OPM was given multiple actions under the sweeping order, most of which were aimed at helping agencies attract and retain a federal workforce prepared to address AI. That role is important as the government is working to rapidly hire for at least 100 AI positions by the summer. The latest actions from OPM give federal agencies a better roadmap for hiring workers in those positions. They also add to OPM's existing work under the order, which has included authorizing direct hire authority for AI-related positions and outlining incentives for attracting and retaining AI workers in the federal government. The General Services Administration is another agency that's been asked to do quite a lot in the executive order. And Monday, GSA announced as part of that, it's released a resource guide for federal purchasers looking to buy generative AI solutions and related computing infrastructure as required within 6 months of the EO's issuance. GSA's Generative AI and Specialized Computing Infrastructure Acquisition Resource Guide, as it's called, details how federal contracting officers can approach Gen AI procurement decisions through suggested questions and considerations. Along with acquisition recommendations, the guide also includes examples of generative AI in government, recommendations for how government entities may use things like sandboxes or test beds before committing to a large-scale purchase, instructions on how agencies may define issues they are looking to solve, and more. GSA Administrator Robin Carnahan said in a press release that the guide offers AI use cases, common challenges, and information to support the public sector's exploration of the growing AI marketplace, adding that the guide starts to leverage the power of AI to better deliver for the public. The resource guide will be updated as technologies develop, GSA said. For more top news and insights at the intersection of the federal government and technology, visit FedScoop.com. President Biden's executive order on AI issued last October set federal agencies on a path to consider adoption of generative AI in a safe and secure manner. While some agencies have expressed caution in using Gen AI, the EO discourages agencies from imposing broad general bans or blocks on agency use of generative AI and instead encourages them, with appropriate safeguards in place, to provide their personnel and programs with access to secure and reliable Gen AI capabilities for the purposes of experimentation and routine tasks that carry a low risk of impacting Americans' rights. Still, the hype around generative AI inside and outside government is high, and there's a propensity to see it as a panacea to fix all problems. But that's not the case, according to Allison Smith, director of generative AI for Booz Allen Hamilton. Smith joins the Daily Scoop podcast to explain how agencies should weigh whether generative AI is a good fit for a problem and what the federal generative AI landscape looks like today. Allison, thanks so much for joining us on the Daily Scoop podcast.
Hi, I'm really happy to be here, Billy.
Really excited to have this conversation. You're the director of generative AI at Booz Allen Hamilton, and I know that you have a sort of wealth of insight into this space, particularly as the public sector, the government, looks to adopt AI and generative AI. But let's start first with sort of a level setting of Booz Allen's role as government approaches AI. What is Booz Allen focused on in that ecosystem of government AI adoption as agencies are looking to move to AI today?
Sure. So Booz Allen is the largest provider of AI services to the federal government, and we cover a really wide range of services from, you know, initial assessments in terms of an organization's maturity to adopt different AI practices, or even just, you know, getting their data together, all the way through building kind of the most bleeding edge applications for governments, and then everything in between. So that looks a lot like, you know, strategy, change management and management and adoption. It looks like responsible AI guardrails. It looks like actual engineering as well. And so we kind of cover the whole spectrum of skills that are needed to help our government agencies better adopt these AI solutions.
That's great. So you covered the whole spectrum. So, you know, I'm curious, as you're working with government agencies and they're looking to take steps to adopt AI, this is all new, and typically the government is a bit behind the private sector, you know, as it tends to lag behind sort of the innovation in the commercial side. But I'm curious, you know, as you're working with agencies in to take those steps to adopt AI, how do you help an agency figure out, one, if AI is right for them? And then two, what kind of AI is the best fit for their needs?
Yeah, that is a great question. And I do want to say that the maturity and sort of where they are in their AI journey really depends on the agency. And even within the agency, there are groups that are maybe more forward leaning or have a mission that is, you know, more like it's easy for them to adopt some newer commercial approaches than other areas of the agencies. And so we see a pretty big range, not just among agencies, but even within them. So that's the first thing. The second is that we always start with kind of understanding the overall kind of landscape of where they are. You know, what kind of resources they have? What does their data look like? Is it, or, you know, centrally warehoused in an on-prem kind of server, or is it already in the cloud? There are lots of kind of little pieces that support the eventual use of AI that we first look at. And then, of course, there's looking at the use cases, right? So AI, and we can talk a little bit later about generative AI specifically, because that's where I'm focusing most of my energies these days, but it can be really expensive. And so we want to make sure that the juice is really worth the squeeze, so to speak. So the use cases are really important. You know, what volume of U.S. citizens is it actually addressing? You know, what are the cost savings, if any, or basically what are the incremental improvements to the services that are happening given the cost of building out, you know, not only the entire AI solution, but having people trained up on it and doing various changes in your organization to do it.
Yeah, no, and I think you bring up a good point that there's a lot of investment, and it's not an easy thing to just throw money at it. And, you know, AI is maybe not always the right fit. So I'd be curious, you know, are there cases where maybe AI, you tell an agency, you're working with an agency, and you tell an agency AI is not the right fit for this. Is there times that you advise people against using AI or generative AI and say, maybe we should approach this with a different sort of solution?
Absolutely. So there are lots of processes that agencies might have that have been, you know, processes that were established decades ago, and they're often rule driven and working just fine. It's more a matter of taking them from a manual, almost paper-based process into something more digital. And in those cases, we might advocate for a pure automation solution. It can have some, you know, basic rules, and it's very easy because you don't have any transparency issues. You don't have interpretability issues. It's not very costly, right? And there are many instances like that where we will advise on doing something a little bit more rule-based, even though it's more digital than it previously was. So that's one example. But then you kind of work your way through the spectrum, because what happens with some of these processes is, you know, if you look at, I'm just going to give an example, it's not meant to refer to any particular client, but if you're looking at, you know, health insurance and claims, right? And you have employees reviewing, let's say, information from a doctor that has different diagnostic codes and trying to determine whether there's a benefit. There are many steps to that that can be manual, like, oh, this field has been filled in and this, you know, other piece of information is there. And it's almost like rule-based, but then there are some decision-making layers that happen in that process. And so a lot of the times we're breaking down the process to figure out, okay, what pieces can be handled by regular automation? And where does it make sense to add in, you know, a little bit of machine learning or even generative AI in that process, without necessarily saying the entire process has to now be a generative AI system?
That makes total sense. And I think it's a good time to, you mentioned there's AI and then there's generative AI. And I think myself and listeners would probably have a good understanding of the nuances to each. But given your role as the director of Gen AI for Booz Allen, I'd love to sort of hear your understanding of the main differences and the pros and cons of it, or not maybe the cons, but what the succinct differences are between a generative AI and your more traditional AI.
Yeah. So fundamentally, generative AI is producing net new content, right? That's like the one thing that I think everyone kind of needs to keep in mind, because if you look at various use cases, so think identifying, you know, tax fraud, for example, you might want to use generative AI for some instances, but here you're kind of like, am I just trying to identify transactions that might be fraud or not? And already as I'm framing that problem, you see it's a little bit more deterministic. It's mm-hmm. yes or no, right? And that's a kind of pure classification problem that doesn't necessarily need generative AI. I think where people are getting a little bit maybe ahead of themselves or excited is that the way that I look at these differences, you have technical differences, you have what I'll say like economic differences, so pretty substantial differences in cost and teams that you need to build it. And then last, like I'll call it like an experience difference, you know, ease of use. And so looking at just pure technical, as I said, generative AI, you're generating net new content, whereas traditional AI is, you know, you can find patterns in data, you can classify and categorize things. It's a little bit more deterministic, and there's usually a correct answer that's much more easy to measure. And then from a technical standpoint, the actual models of generative AI, as I mentioned, they are probabilistic in nature. So they are spitting out kind of the next most probable word. So it's just a sequence generator for, you know, if I'm being overly simplistic, but that's pretty different, right? And that's the technical meat. And then thinking about the economics. So all AI can be more expensive than a pure, you know, rule-based automation or an Excel macro, but generative AI is just a lot more expensive in terms of training if you're going to do that. And even when you're using it and running inference, every time, you know, a user writes something to that generative AI system and it spits out, you know, a couple paragraphs, every time that that happens, there's computation that occurs, and it adds up really quickly relative to, you know, identifying transactions with fraud. And so you have to remember that the scale of the costs are going to be different, which brings me to the last point about the experience and the ease of use and why people are so eager to adopt generative AI, even if it's not the best approach. And it's because it's so easy and intuitive to use that even the individual, you know, people are using it now, right? I don't think anyone would just sit around and be like, hey, I'm sitting at home, I'm going to use some AI previously. But now that you have ChatGPT, Claude, and all these, I mean, Llama 3 open source models, and all these options to interact with it as an end user, you see how easy it is to use. And so some organizations are asking us, you know, do I need all these specialized resources now if I can just throw generative AI at this problem? And yeah, it might be expensive, but like, am I saving costs because it's so much easier to use? And that's kind of where you kind of have to get into these nuanced trade-off discussions and really drill deep into the use cases.
Yeah. And I think that's a perfect segue to where I wanted to go next. Are there certain use cases you see in the public sector and the government space that, are the stronger use cases for generative AI because of the way those trade-offs make more sense, or because they're solving those challenges in a way that make more sense than you know, using an automation or a more simplistic AI?
Yeah, so we find our clients are thinking about generative AI in two ways. One is to support the individual worker in their regular tasks. So that's drafting emails, summarizing, you know, notes from a WebEx or, you know, a Teams meeting, and creating action items and things like that. And that's sort of happening at this individual, you know, everyday task level. And then you have more, we have some agencies who are processing tax returns and others that are processing, you know, medical claims, and then some, you know, patent applications. And all of these processes require some kind of adjudication of information that happens on a recurring basis. And that's where you sort of get an interesting business proposition, because as, you know, the volume of claims or the volume of applications from citizens start coming in, the government really does want to ensure a high level of quality first, and then second, sort of this responsiveness that they frequently are unable to meet because, you know, the volume is so high and there's only so much budget, right? And so that's kind of where they're starting to lean into, okay, where can generative AI speed up this process by doing things like, you know, retrieving the most relevant pieces of a policy for my employee to review and say, okay, yes, I can process this claim, or I cannot process this claim. And so we're looking really kind of at that nuanced level. It's not the entire use case, but rather what portions of a use case can we lean in to essentially make it really worth it, worth those costs. And so they tend to happen where there's a lot of recurring usage and where there's high, I want to say transaction volume, but what I really mean is citizens who are interacting with that agency.
That makes total sense. I'd be curious, you know, I've covered this, you know, since late 2022 into 2023, and now we're in 2024. And it's been a bumpy road, and particularly in the federal space, there's been a number of players that have been hesitant to get into the AI space and generative AI in particular. What are the biggest challenges that you see agencies facing, or the biggest holdups that you hear from IT officials who maybe aren't ready to dive in?
I think the number one thing is the uncertainty around how to do it responsibly. And that can span so many different dimensions, from, you know, your more traditional like security, which is you don't want any data leakages. You don't want it to accidentally provide PII or PHI to, you know, unauthorized parties and things like that. And so you have, you know, your traditional security measures. But then if you go a few more layers deeper, it's basically, okay, how do I make sure it's not toxic? How do I make sure it's not hallucinating, especially on really important, you know, benefits that we're trying to give citizens, right? This is where veracity is like top line, one of the most important things. And so you're seeing a hesitance because they are looking for better guardrails to do this responsibly. They see the value, they see kind of the efficiency and the quality that can be gained. But what happens with those few instances where, you know, the generative AI system hallucinates or does things like that? And then lastly, this is probably a little bit less relevant to our clients, but it's still an important thing to consider, is the outputs and ensuring that they don't include any copyrighted information or patented information. That's also really important from an ethical standpoint. And so I think there's just a lot of concerns. In fact, if I think of another, some use cases, right, where they can be especially sensitive, especially historically, thinking about like loan processing and things. You want to make sure there's no bias in what the generative AI system is doing. And that's much harder than rule-based processes because it's not as transparent. And so, you know, what mechanisms can we help them build to monitor that better?
So as we close out, Allison, you know, there's plenty of early adopters in this space, but I think there's probably more first followers that are coming on online today and starting to dip their toe in the generative AI space. So for those first followers, I'd be curious, you know, what would be your advice to help them get started? What actions would you recommend they take so that they're doing, going on this journey in that safe, secure, and ethical manner?
Yeah, so a lot of these first followers are already kind of taking what they're seeing from, you know, the Biden administration's executive order and trying to take these kind of high level guidelines essentially and create policies around them. And so that's what we're seeing a lot of agencies begin to draft, which is, okay, we need to have some kind of generative AI governance policy for our enterprise so that when we do start building, we at least have some guardrails that limit us in ways that we want to be limited. And so I think that's an easy kind of first step for those enterprises.
Well, Allison, very insightful stuff. Really appreciate your time and getting the opportunity to catch up and hear more about what Booz Allen's doing with generative AI. So thank you so much for your time.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me, Billy.
For more on generative AI, visit fedscoop.com. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Daily Scoop podcast, available on all podcast platforms. If you've already rated the podcast on your platform of choice, thanks so much. High ratings and good reviews of the show help more people to find it. The Daily Scoop podcast is a production of the Scoop News Group in Washington, D.C. Adam Butler and Carlin Fisher help put the show together, and the entire Scoop News Group team contributes. We'll be back tomorrow with more top headlines. Until then, I'm your host, Billy Mitchell. Thanks so much for listening.